Thank you, Saul, and thank you, everyone, for staying up until this last presentation. As Saul said, we are going to be actually three speakers, and me and Razvan will be talking about what are the latest features in the Stable 3.0 release, and Peter will be giving us some practical insights about the asynchronous API. If you don't know us, my name is Liviu Kirku. This is Razvan Krajna. We have like 18 years of experience in working with OpenSIPS, and you can reach us out This is an interesting thing. So my cursor is moving. Okay, at those tags over there on Twitter and IRC, and. From looking at you, how many of you know about OpenSIPS or what it is? And okay, so that's pretty much everyone. But for those of you at home that don't know much about it, a couple of words. It's a highly customizable SIP server. It's very performant. It has a multi-process architecture and a custom configuration language which allows you to quickly build SIP and VoIP services, and a ton of modules that back it up, so you can do a lot of cool stuff with it. And it's, of course, all of it is open sourced and free to use. A lot of it is also available in this nice presentation that Bogdan, the OpenSIPS founder, gave at AstriCon a couple of years ago. Just search on YouTube, OpenSIPS Swiss Army Knife, and that's all. You'll learn everything in just 40 minutes. So back to today's topic about the philosophy and features behind 3.0. We noticed that there are some trends in the RTC industry, such as migration to cloud-based deployments, whereas the service provider want to optimize their costs and improve their margins. Everyone wants to have this rapid development cycle, and testing, of course. They have the CI/CD pipelines and whatnot. Fully automated deployment, of course. You don't SSH into instances anymore. I mean, I guess you sometimes do, but ideally you'd want this to be fully automated, so you can do the last part that I've highlighted there, such that you ensure better SLAs and have a better reputation, be a better player. So what does all of this sum up into? The development side, the ensuring good quality, and of course operating this whole thing, DevOps, and that was what we decided to focus on in 3.0. We did a little bit of each. So if we talk about operating OpenSIPS, a few notable features will be. So the first one would be the ability to reload the configuration language. So it's finally here. This was something that was waiting, I guess, for too many years, and we decided to take some time and do it and stop doing cool SIP features and focus a bit on productivity and making things easier for our users. So you pretty much, this is all you have to do. Just send an MI reload command and you should be good to go. Just a small mention here, it will only reload the routes. So if you have to load a new module or change a module parameter, you will still need to restart it. But we feel that just reloading the routes should cover up for 90% of needs to restart. For example, when you need to change some logging line or change a bit of route here and there. A new operating related feature that we introduced is the ability for it to auto-scale. So there was always this problem that you didn't know how many processes you should configure it with. And there was no really good answer to it because it depends on what kind of workloads you have, what hardware you have, whatnot. And so now you can just specify like a top threshold and a bottom threshold. So for example, here, it will grow up to 25 processes, so it will keep on forking, but it also knows how to unfork them. So it cuts down on your costs, maybe during the night or when you have less workload on your platform. You just hook it into the timer settings or the UDP listener, and that's pretty much it. Here's a graph of how it works. For example, you can see here with the blue line that we threw like 400 CPS at it with CP, and the matching number of, or the matching graph shows the number of processes going up, and towards the end we cut down on the traffic so the processes unfork. Okay. This is a bit of an experiment. At least Razvan says that it works well. We haven't yet played with it a lot. The persistent memory, which is a really nice way of reloading and restarting your instances, even if you may have like hundreds of millions of data. For example, here, let's say you have like a number portability database, right, of 16 gigabytes, and you want to load it from MySQL. Well, that thing will take up like 15 minutes or something. So that's what we used to have. But now, with the magic that Razvan did with mapping this to a file, everything loads instantly, and the data structures are getting rebuilt right on after the restart. So yeah, play with that and let us know how it worked for you. I'm sure Razvan would love some feedback on it. Moving on to script development and how we try to improve the experience over there for our users. I would like to ask a quick question. How many of you have heard of at least one of these tools? Ansible, Puppet, Chef, or Salt? Okay. So that's like more than half the room. So we you know, got up to speed with those as well. And because we had this idea that, okay, we have templating, right? These commits were done in 2013. We have M4. Everyone should be happy, right? But it turns out that not everyone uses M4 anymore. People evolve, and people started using, you know, maybe embedded Ruby or Jinja or other templating languages that are easier for them to manage. And previously, they were stuck with M4. They had no package of support if they wanted to use their custom preprocessors, and let alone the init scripts. And the small problem was also that you had to manage two files, the M4 file and the CFG file. So it happened, I'm pretty sure it happened to you as well, where you would make a change in the CFG, you restart, and then it gets regenerated and overwritten. So you lose the change because you had to write in the other file instead. And so that problem is gone as well now. And also there was this idea that it reported in one file, so that if you had a typo or some error, right at line 227 in the CFG, that would actually, and it would look like this, so some line, right? When you go back to the generator file, the template file, that would be in a whole different place because it wouldn't have the ability to match the proper line. So even this is fixed now. So now all of the, if you use the new dash P option, the preprocessor, the generic preprocessor, now all the lines will point to the template file. So this is pretty cool. There's a lot of stuff on the website on this. There's a new section, templating CFG files. You can read more about those. And this one was a bit of a quirk that we took care of. Actually, if you look at what we had before, we had this strange problem that some of the module functions accepted both strings and variables, whereas some, like NatUAC test, didn't. They only accepted static strings. Notice how I call them strings, but these are actually integers. So another question is, why the hell do you quote integers? That's another thing that nobody dared to ask up until now. Okay, we took care of all of this. So take a look at how things look like now, right? An integer is an integer, no quotes. And any function accepts any kind of input, consistency. So we feel that this will speed up the development and make it easier for new people to pick up OpenSIPS and get up to speed with it and start building services with it. This is another example of function that we normalized. And Going into the QA side of things, we also made some changes there. If you're familiar with how OpenSIPS works, do you know the three allocators of OpenSIPS? Or you do? Okay, so not that many people. No, but cool. So we basically have three ways of you to configure your OpenSIPS to manage its memory. One of it, the default, it's fast and good. The other one is for QA and testing, and the other one is for multi-core hardware and to be used in that kind of environment. And those are all built into the binary now. You don't need to recompile with each one. So we have that now where we've added these switches, and you can just pick between these at startup. Really convenient. So I'm going to let Razvan talk a bit about how you can interact with OpenSIPS.
Thank you, Olivia. So there are a few ways of interacting with OpenSIPS, and probably all of them rely on the fact that OpenSIPS provides a management interface where you can query or you can trigger commands to it. And there are several tools that could use that management interface and make things more fancier. One of them is OpenSIPS Control Panel, which is a PHP web interface that can be used to both provision data in the database and trigger reloads to OpenSIPS or fetch information from OpenSIPS. Another one was OpenSIPS CTL, which are basically some bash scripts which allow you to do more or less the same thing. And there was another project, not sure how many of you ever used it, I haven't, the OpenSIPS console, which was a Perl console that you could use to interact with OpenSIPS. What we've done was to remove these two. And replace them with the new OpenSIPS CLI. OpenSIPS CLI is a Python module and a command that can be used to do basically the same thing. It aims to replace the old OpenSIPS CTL and OpenSIPS console and provides a single package that can be used to control and interact with several OpenSIPS instances from a single application. It is written in Python, and it provides the OpenSIPS CLI module. This means that you can use write your own Python application and import the entire OpenSIPS CLI framework by writing use OpenSIPS CLI, and from that point you can trigger MI commands and all sorts of interesting commands to OpenSIPS. So it's very, very easy to use and to extend. It has a modular interface. All you can do is write a file, define a method, and you will have your own commands in OpenSIPS CLI that can trigger OpenSIPS different actions. It is highly